This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Listen to the bite-sized business breakfast, best bits from Tuesday, January the 26th. Coming up, we'll be hearing from Justin McGowan. Justin is basically Australia's main man down at Expo 2020. Significant day for them today. It is Australia Day, January the 26th, but it's also the day that will mark the official opening of their pavilion, something they're very proud of, with good reason, and something that lays the foundations of the platform for economic recovery out of COVID-19. Talking of Australia Day, we use that as our own springboard, if you like, to a conversation about the economic links and otherwise between the UAE and Australia, longstanding for many people and many organisations here in the region. We also spoke private jets a little earlier on in proceedings. Why? Because those in the know, those in aviation, have spoken about the rise in the number of private jets using airspace here in the UAE and using facilities. We caught up with the team at Dubai South. We also spoke to Holger Ostheimer from DC Aviation Alpha Tame to see if this was a thing, and if so, where the jets were coming from, which countries, and who was chartering these jets to use here in the region. And before all that, of course, we addressed all things vaccines, all things COVID and more. All the latest with Serena Kelly with our regular Ask Serena segment.
Ask Serena.
Serena Kelly's here in studio. Good morning to you, SK.
Morning, guys.
Well, thank you for being with us.
You're most welcome.
No, I'm just trying to work out.
I feel like I have to do something now.
No, I'm working out whether to bombard you with a question or two, or I'm going to sort of let's do cases first.
Okay. And then,
so you set the scene.
So this time last week, we were looking at figures of 3,471. New case numbers yesterday, 3,591. So that's a new high. More than 140,400 tests were conducted across the country. Your tally of active cases right now currently stands at 25,444 people. That is a drop from the day before. Six fatalities yesterday, so we're at 798. 3,820 recoveries, so we're at a total tally of 255,304 recoveries. And your round full number of reported cases in the UAE currently stands at 281,546. When it comes to vaccine distribution, we've had more than 2.5 million doses of vaccine distributed across the country. That's a rate of 26 doses per 100 people.
Okay, Serena.
Yes.
Why can't people get into vaccination centres?
You need an appointment. That would be the best option, especially if it's Pfizer, DHA, definitely an appointment. Sinopharm, through all the facilities, the SEHA facilities, you've got like the different drive-through facilities. You need to make an appointment for sure. But some of the centres have been taking walk-in or do specific timings for families.
Only reason I ask, a couple of questions coming through. Questions, a couple of concerns, a little bit of frustration. Understand it out there, people wanting to do their bit in the fight against COVID-19. Serena, sort this one out, will you? Lots of vaccination centres are turning people away. Can you please update on the regulations as you are hearing them at the moment, why this is, and if you've got any idea when they will open? These directives are coming from the relevant health authorities. Also, the booking system is closed as well. So feeling a bit of frustration out there, people basically blaming you.
Oh, thanks. No, but it's definitely understandable. I think we have to remember that, you know, you've got more than 100 facilities in Abu Dhabi that are offering the vaccine and more than 100 in Dubai. There are facilities across all seven Emirates. But just to say that with regards to, I think it's probably the fact that you've got the high workload going towards the same places. Try and find other places that maybe you haven't heard about that are actually offering the vaccine. So, for example, I know yesterday we had people inquiring about hospitals in Dubai that are offering a vaccine would be Rashid Hospital, Dubai Hospital, Latifa Hospital, all the MediClinics, all the Emirates Speciality Hospitals, the Brazil Network, VPS Network, NMC Hospitals. And these it's constantly being updated, the list, with regards, and we're trying to keep on top of that and updating that on the Air and News Centre app for you as well.
Is there a suggestion that you've kind of got popularity clusters of centres then, that you go get your vaccine, six of your mates ask you where you've got it, so
exactly.
You tell them, they tell six of their mates, and the sort of vaccination news spreads, if you like.
It's almost like when, Brandy, you relayed your experience and you said it was great to go to the Al-Ittihad vaccination centre between 2 and 5. I can imagine everybody...
And the next day it was closed.
Yeah, I mean, it was. No joke.
I don't have that much sway, trust me.
There's the amount, you know, the posts that I'm seeing, for example, on social media of, you know, certain groups, and they'll say, oh, I just went, it took me 10 minutes, yeah. It was brilliant. Yeah, you're absolutely right. People are getting, it's like, right, I want to get mine done quickly, so I'm going to go there.
It's like telling everybody what time Marks and Spencer sticks the discount stickers on the vegetables, isn't it? You ruin it for everybody.
Yep. Right. So just keep the information to yourself. But there are so many places that you can go and get either the Pfizer vaccine or the Sinopharm vaccine. And if you're not sure, ring up the health authorities, the DHA 800-342. Check their apps. The SEHA app is so informative with regards to the different places that you can book. Drive through facilities. If you don't want to walk in anywhere and you just want to stay in the comfort of your car, that is an option as well.
What's Dr. Tedros been talking about?
So they had a presser last night. He spoke about the crossing of more than 100 million cases globally. And also he discussed where we currently stand.
Vaccines are giving us hope, which is why every life we lose now is even more tragic. I have called for vaccination of health workers and older people to be underway in all countries within the first 100 days of the year. But there is so much we can all do to navigate our way out of this pandemic. While we all wait our turn to be vaccinated, physical distancing, avoiding crowds, masks, hand hygiene, ventilation, and more. You might be sick of hearing it. You might be sick of doing it, but this virus is not sick of us.
And he just makes a fair point, and it's something that the UAE is constantly trying to get across to the general public. Please keep to those precautionary guidelines. There are still fines in place. If you're out and you're not wearing a mask, it's 3,000 dirhams. Dubai recently updated their guidelines with regards to restaurants, cafes, gyms, with the distancing needing to be 3 meters now. If you're having a social event, should only be immediate family members, no more than 10. And even if you get the vaccine, it is still a directive. Please do follow precautionary measures, even if you've had the vaccine.
Shabir asks, rules in Sharjah regarding gatherings.
Okay. So Dubai recently updated their guidelines. Mm. I just mentioned that before. No more than 10 has to be immediate family members. With regards to the last directive, it was prior to the lead up towards New Year's. Again, the main message from a UAE press briefing is happening today, this afternoon. The messaging still stands. Please make sensible decisions. Right now, we've just been discussing how there's more than 25,000 active cases here in the UAE. If it's not necessary to have people round to your house, don't do it. Mm. Do it in a safe environment that is monitored, be outside. Just let's get these numbers down, and then you can start looking at having people round to your house.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
All right, well, we are talking aviation this morning, following up on one of our big stories of the week, and that is the massive uptick in private jets that Dubai South has seen in the last year, particularly in the last quarter of 2020, an increase of 78% on the year before. We are going to speak now to the Managing Director of DC Aviation, Al Futtaim, a company who knows the private jet services, in fact, has the base there at Al Maktoum International. Also, charters everything from helicopters to Cessnas to Gulfstreams, involved in aircraft maintenance and management as well. Very pleased to be speaking now to Holger Ottsmeier, the Managing Director of DC Aviation Al Futtaim. Holger, lovely to speak to you again.
Good morning, Brenda. Thank you for having me.
What's 2020 been like for your operations, not just on the ground, but the planes that you're chartering as well?
It's been a rough ride altogether. We started off in early January with the issues around the airspace in Iran. Then we went straight into the implications of the pandemic. But there is positive news from the post-lockdown period, most predominantly at about July onwards. We've seen charter inquiries with an average of about 1,000 per month, which is a very unusually high level.
What would you normally see, Holger?
We'd normally see maybe 50, maybe 100 inquiries per month, but 1,000 is clearly you know, a different kettle of fish.
How many of those inquiries are turning into actual bookings?
Very early on, we were very much restricted by the limited freedom of movement of people and the uncertainty of local restrictions. We would have probably materialized at that time about 50 flights per month.
Okay. And in the last quarter, which is the quarter we're looking at, that lovely winter holiday season?
It's been really good. We have seen at Dubai South, that goes for the entire airport, about 100 aircraft per day being present in Al Maktoum. And we pretty much do a charter every day at the moment.
So who is chartering them?
That has changed over time. We've seen a very different clientele inquiring, people not totally familiar with the product that we're offering, with the price points too, so that out of desperation, especially replacement of people, relocation requirements, we had inquiries of people that would not normally call our number.
Right, so people thinking, I've got no other option.
Absolutely, and that's obviously changed with the demand having settled, of people having returned to where they needed to be. So we are now largely driven by one corporate requirement, but also a lot of leisure people looking to come to Dubai or looking to leave to Dubai to their original destination.
Okay. That leisure travel, that sort of November, December, now into January holiday travel, where is that coming from?
That's the usual suspects, Iran, Pakistan, but we've also seen people from Russia, from the Ukraine and Europe.
There's a bit of a an assumption that there's quite a lot of wealthy UK tourism or business tourism from companies looking to hold meetings and the rest of it out here. Is that fact? Is that what you're seeing?
I haven't seen an unusual amount of UK travellers. I think they're all part of the remaining nationalities, other European countries, as well as the more closer countries as Pakistan and India.
Okay. Well, supply and demand, Holger. If you are seeing a lot more demand for your planes, what's happening to the price?
Yeah, there is a lot of demand within the immediate sphere here, as well as countries further away that will be operators from out of Europe and elsewhere. So there's a lot of aircraft capacity on the market, which unfortunately makes certain operators being very soft on the price. But if you offer a high-end product, a good quality product like ourselves, then, you know, there is obviously a price to the service.
Does the lower price of fuel at the moment make private aviation more attractive or even more possible?
It does. It provides you know, a small margin of flexibility in providing a slightly better price point. At this moment in time, we're offering the US, or we are buying the US gallon at under, way under $2 per US gallon, where in recent years you would have seen prices anywhere between $2 and $3.50.
There's been a bit of a backlash in some markets against people escaping lockdowns and travel restrictions for holidays in places like sunny Dubai. Do you see an increased concern for privacy from your clients, or are they not bothered?
No, I think especially for ourselves, running everything from one facility, so the entire portfolio of services that we are providing, we do that from within our facility. There is a high level of privacy that we're offering to our clients. We haven't seen any of those concerns.
And what is the testing situation for people who are coming in on private aircraft? How does that work?
Well, BC Aviation Alpha Time provides a unique service here in offering high-speed PCR testing. from our VVIP lounge facilities. And we do that in cooperation with Alphatime's health partner, Health Hub, so that we are able to provide a feedback, a test result to our guests within 6 hours, which is unique in the market here in Dubai.
Okay. What do you think is going to happen going forward into this year then? We're seeing increased lockdowns in Europe. We're seeing rising cases in a number of markets. What does that mean for your business?
Brenda, if only I had a crystal ball, I would be in a much better position. But the year has started off with a very, very positive outlook. I would like to see this continue. I've got great confidence. Sadly enough, the pandemic isn't going away tomorrow. There will always be certain requirements of people needing to travel or seeking refuge in Dubai and catching a bit of sun that is in dire demand elsewhere. I would see this continue for another few months, and then we hopefully return to normal business levels to sustain a good amount of business that makes us being a lot more confident overall.
Holger Osmeyer is the Managing Director of DC Aviation Alphatime, not just leasing planes and helicopters there, but also running quite a major operation down at the Al Maktoum International Airport at Dubai South, the fixed base operations there, speaking to us about those numbers that we have seen come out about a jump in private plane movements, both in and out of Dubai South, up around 20%, 21% for 2020, and up 78% in the final quarter of the year.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
It is India Republic Day. Plenty of events to mark India Republic Day. Plenty of events to mark Australia Day. And a lot of you getting in touch with us. We've had a bit of an Australia focus this morning. Been speaking to the team behind the Australia Pavilion at Expo 2020. Been speaking to Sam Gill, Meat and Livestock Australia, a little earlier on. But also asking, what's the best thing ever to come out of Australia? Sam might have said lamb and beef. Others are saying something different. This one's come through from Adam, who's got in touch. Adam, thank you very much indeed for your text message. Happy Australia Day, says Mr. Adam Maloof. Our greatest export is, apart from agricultural products and mining products, probably our services and know-how. Do you concur?
Well, we've got a lot of Australians in important positions in this region, do we not? We work for some of them.
Yeah, and that said, and it's something we didn't ask Justin and the team from DFAT a little earlier on, and there's a lot of contractors that worked on Expo 2020 from Australia as well. So even before mm-hmm. Expo has opened, Australian contractors have done very well out of it. Others come up with some other interesting suggestions. The Sullivans and Prisoner Cell Block H.
Television programmes.
Thank you very much indeed to all those that said that other foodstuffs and beverages might be up there for consideration. Appreciate those as well. And for all the other suggestions that have come through, still an opportunity for you to get yours through. Speedos, are they very Australian or not?
Well, I would argue that you get more Australian males wearing Speedos than you do any other country. But let me find out where Speedos actually come from. Nottingham. That well-known surf and holiday spot.
Nottingham, Victoria, or Nottingham.
Yours. They do have roots in Australia, apparently, but are no longer manufactured there. But they were indeed founded in Sydney.
Founded in Sydney, now manufactured for the millions in Nottingham.
In Nottingham.
Hill Hoist? Never heard of Hill Hoist, but apparently it's a clothesline.
Of course, the Speedo, you know the little red sort of tick on the side of a Speedo?
Yeah.
It's a boomerang.
Oh, yeah. That I did not know.
Didn't realise
that.
But
now you've opened my eyes to that. I will go and check mine out a little later on. Rip Curl, Australian?
Surf gear, longboard shorts, T-shirts, etc. Uggs is the disputed one because two surfers going head-to-head over the Ugg logo. And the Ugg logo dispute has rattled on for years in a number of countries. Basically, you had one surfer who registered Ugg with an H and then UG with a U. But then you had another Australian surfer who registered it in the States, and then the Australian registration wasn't used for a while, I don't think. And then the US-based Australian surfer sold his trademark and all the rest of it for UG boots to an American company called Deckers.
Okay.
I want to say they make deck shoes, but I feel like I might be making a wild assumption there.
Yeah.
But anyway, and they registered it in the US and lots of countries around the world and kind of became the UG people. So when you see the UGs that we think of as UGs, and there was a point, you know what I'm talking about, those big sort of booty things with the sheepskin inside them. Whenever you saw in the last couple of years, there was a point, wasn't there? There was quite a lot of celebrity endorsement for the old UGs.
Yeah.
They were actually the American-made UGGs. There has been lots of cease and desist. There's been lots of letters. There's been lots of trademark back and forthing about whether UGGs was actually a generic term in Australia, you know, in the whole way where you can't trademark camembert from one company, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. One of those going on. But I think that legally the Deckers people might have the trademark, but I don't know if they can still do that in Australia. But they've kind of gone after a lot of people who were doing it. However, where am I? Let me see where it actually ended up. Yet Koala Burra argued that the term was generic. I don't know where they finished.
Tim Tams has also come through from somebody. Tim Tams and Crowded House, do they get the nod or not?
Crowded House is from New Zealand. They are from Te Awamutu. Thank you very much.
Somebody's texted in. This one's for you, Brandy. Pavlova.
No, neither.
Neither. Okay.
That's ours.
Mahmood says, Nicole Kidman, can you claim her or not?
No, she's theirs.
She could be. Okay, so there's them. Claire
so
Williams.
Is Russell Crowe. Whenever he's badly behaved, when he's well behaved, he's ours. That's pretty much how we sort these things out.
Claire's in cahoots with you as well. She suggests Australia's greatest export, arguably Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Got to be up there. Talking of Australia, though, and it is Australia Day today, therefore there has been a little bit of a focus on all things Australia. Here's a little one for you. Talking of Australian brands out there, what would you put down as the most valuable brand, as in company, in Australia in the last year? I mean in terms...
It's a substance that we talk about on the show.
It is not. No, it's not a substance. It is an organisation. I've got in front of me the list of the 25 most valuable brands or companies in Australia. Combined value of $90 billion.
Car company?
It is not a car company, although they
Qantas.
Do feature. It is not Qantas, which, interestingly, is nowhere near the top. Qantas features down in 19th place in the top 25.
Sorry, are we talking brand value or company value?
The 25 most valuable brands in Australia. So companies and brands.
The Wallabies.
With the largest brand value.
It's going to be something sporting, isn't it?
Is not.
Sydney Opera House.
Is not.
I give up.
It is number one. Well, number two, interestingly enough, is Australia and New Zealand Banking Group, ANZ.
Okay.
With a combined value of $10.946 million. Commonwealth Bank of Australia. I just think CommBank would be, really? I mean, yeah, okay, they've got a bit of cash behind them, but in terms of brand value?
I never understand how people measure brand value, to be perfectly honest.
Other names up there, Telstra, Westpac, Woolworths.
Yeah, the Australian Woolworths, Aussie Woolworths, as opposed to South African Woolworths. As opposed to your Woolworths.
Steward's inquiry, please. Steward's inquiry.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
So not only is it India Republic Day today, it is also Australia Day. And a significant day for Australians the world over. A very significant day for Australia right here in the UAE. We're taking the opportunity to celebrate the long-standing links, economic and otherwise, between Australia and the UAE. And the 26th of January will be one of those significant days. Why? Well, we're joined on the line by Commissioner General Australia Expo 2020 Dubai at the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, Justin McGowan. Good morning to you, Justin, and happy Australia Day.
Good morning, Tom. Thank you very much for having me on the program. Yes, certainly it is a happy Australia Day.
Significant day as well for you and your team, specifically with regards to Expo 2020. What's happening at the site today?
So, Tom, there's a lot happening on the site today. It's an opportunity to recognise the completion of the Australian Pavilion. So we've spent the last number of years and over 400,000 hours preparing for Expo and constructing our pavilion. And today marks the day where we can draw that to a close and successfully reflect on building a great structure that we use here in Dubai.
A significant day for Australia, significant year for the UAE as well. It must be an element of pride for you and all those involved that you're one of the first international pavilions to complete on site.
Yes, we are. We took the decision not to delay when the event was delayed and continue with the construction, which I think has paid dividends. It's good to have the construction completed, and now we can focus on the programming elements, and that's really where the greatest benefit will come for Australia, where we'll look to leverage the event for trade and investment opportunities, but in particular in light of COVID. So we'll use it as a platform to leverage economic recovery and, you know, establish trade links and connect again with old friends and new markets, and look at using the opportunity to diversify our markets.
That's a really interesting way of looking at Expo 2020. A lot of people are obviously asking question marks at the moment about since the moving from last year to this year, what sort of form it will take later on this year. But you're of the belief, the considered belief, that it will be a springboard, if you like, for economic recovery.
Certainly. And in my consultation and conversation with other nations, I think they're also looking at through that lens, that whilst expos are traditionally around nation branding and showcasing the best of your nation to the world, I think this one has a particular slant and a particular view that, given the hardship the world has gone through, that this is a real opportunity to kickstart social and economic recovery. So that's the approach we're taking.
Morning, Justin.
Good morning, Brandy. How are you going?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. Look, tell me, have you changed anything in the design, in the content of your pavilion, or even in just the numbers that you are expecting as a result of the last year?
So we have, obviously it's an evolving situation. We, you know, constantly looking at the environment as it changes. We have recast the numbers in terms of potential people that can fit within the pavilion and being mindful of social distancing options. We are also looking at our content and have adjusted some elements, you know, particularly around healthcare, for example, which is more prominent now, and looking at our business programming in terms of how can we assist the industries that have been hardest impacted by COVID. So I guess just refining what we already had, but recognising how the world has changed.
Has it added to your cost of building the pavilion?
The delay costs, obviously keeping a building running for another year has increased some costs, but that's something that we can manage, and looking at how we adjust our programming to suit that. I will say that we've had fantastic support from the Expo organisers in containing those costs at every step, even through the development of the construction, but also in this maintenance period where most nations are looking to hibernate their pavilion for some period of time. We will continue to utilise our pavilion throughout this year for discrete and targeted events, and we'll also provide an opportunity. So I'll give you a short scoop here that over the next few weeks, we'll present an opportunity for some Australians, some lucky Australians, to come and visit the pavilion and have a sneak peek.
Talking of Australians visiting, one of the big reasons for taking part in an expo is to bring your business people out to get, you know, trade deals, to get new contacts and to get new contracts. How's that going to work this year with Australia's border restrictions being what they are? And do you see vaccination as being a big part of that?
So we are, once again, monitoring that really closely. I guess in terms of our mitigations to manage that situation, we've invested heavily in digital platforms, so really leveraging technology to overcome some of those barriers, whilst they are not the same as face-to-face. But we try to remove as many impediments to doing business as possible. And I think, you know, much of the world is now accustomed to leveraging these platforms. So the Australian Pavilion, for example, when we do run our events at the Pavilion, we you know, have effectively set up a studio now within the Pavilion. I think that will be the next area of competition between nations, is who can up the ante on the typical Zoom or WebEx call.
So we're not going to have as many Australian businessmen hopping on flights to come out? What's the thinking?
Yet to be seen. I think as confidence increases with the vaccine rolling out, and I think the UAE is doing a great job in terms of ramping up vaccinations, I think that's yet to be seen, but I think it'll come down to what does the world look like in October. But I'm really optimistic and positive that there will be a change in sentiment, and people will come back to large mega events such as the Expo. I think the The Olympics in Japan will be a test of that as well in terms of people's willingness to travel, but certainly we'll be making our preparations available for physical and digital presence at Expo.
Very diverse links between the UAE and Australia, and obviously we saw an encouragement of that, or a formulation of that, only last year with the establishment of the first ever Australia-United Arab Emirates Business Council down in Sydney. In terms of the sort of themes for the pavilion this year, we're talking to the Meat and Livestock Australia boys a little later on. Education's been a big one here as well down the years. Will that continue, and will that be reflected in the pavilion?
Absolutely. So we have narrowed down a number of priority sectors, and as I said, that's assisting those industries or those sectors that have been most impacted by COVID. Education and international education will be a key theme for us, and that's along the lines of not only student attraction but also curriculums and sharing Australian education with the world. Food and agriculture, resources and energy, advanced manufacturing, space, health and digital technologies, and also elements of infrastructure. We'll also look at tourism, but that really is dependent on what the world looks like at that stage. So they're really the sectors we're focusing in on, working closely with Expo, collaborating with other nations, and leveraging the international business engagement team at Expo, where they're assisting us in connecting from a B2B and a G2B point of view with other nations around the world.
Good on you, Justin. Really appreciate your time this morning. All the best with the events today down at the Expo site. Looking forward to seeing the pavilion in the coming weeks and months. And a huge thanks to you and all your team for agreeing to join us live on the line this morning. That's Justin McGowan. Justin is the Commissioner General Australia Expo 2020 Dubai at the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. They will launch officially their pavilion a little later on. And apparently, this got the largest flagpole. The flag will be flown down there today, the Australian flag. It's got the largest flagpole of the International Pavilion. So something the New Zealand Pavilion has to have a little look at, all right?
Sort it out.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.